We're live from our studios here at Kokomlemle in Accra. The bulletin is also live across our affiliates around the country. Tonight, reactions to the Ghana Tertiary Education Commission's order to the University of Ghana to immediately reverse and refund a 25% hike for the 2025-2026 academic year.
No university is allowed to increase fees, including the University of Ghana, when it comes to academic facility user fees. Academic facility user fees are determined by Parliament.
We speak to the minority on the Education Committee, plus hear from students at the University of Ghana.
It's not good, because if you look at around, look at our classrooms, our microphones are not working, some of the school amenities are not actually in check. So if we are going to increase all these things, are you guys going to work on it? That's the question. If you are going to work on it, why not? We'll pay for it. But if you are not going to do anything about it, I'm sorry, some of us are going to, you know, protest against it. We are not happy with the increment.
Also ahead, Coalition of Unpaid Teachers says members face severe financial hardship of the government's failure to clear 50 months of salary arrears.
Failure to do so will leave us with no other alternative but to lawfully take to the streets to demonstrate and demand the justice we rightly deserve.
We have details as the group gives the government until the end of January to address the issue or face legal action in business.
Tax experts warn not all consumers will immediately benefit from the new VAT reform seeking to reduce prices of goods and services.
In sports,
Benin push Egypt to extra time in the African Cup of Nations round of 16.
And a bit later, late Ayawaso MP Nazar Toure Mahama laid to rest as government officials and colleague MPs eulogize his life and contribution to Parliament in the last 13 years of service to his constituents.
He has paid his dues, he has contributed immensely, he has kept the constituency for us.
Very diligent in attending to business in the house. Even to the very last day that we went on recess, just about 2 weeks ago, he was with us.
You want to stay with us in the next 1 hour for the latest of these and many other stories. My name is Kenneth Jesse. You can also be a part of this conversation by sending us a WhatsApp on 055-1111-997. Details out. You're welcome to the program. Let's begin on the education front, because the Ghana Tertiary Education Commission, GTEC, has slammed the University of Ghana over its 25% fee hike for the 2025-2026 academic year, ordering an immediate reversal and refund for students who overpaid. Director General of GTEC, Professor Ahmed Jinapo, stressed that public universities cannot raise fees without Parliament's approval. Professor Jinapo said all new fees, including the 75th anniversary and development levy charges, must be suspended immediately.
Well, as you are aware, the Minister for Education did direct GTEC to issue a statement to the effect that this year, that is the 2025-2026 academic year, fees are not supposed to be increased for all publicly funded tertiary institutions. And I think somewhere in November we issued such a statement. Today, it's come to the attention of the commission, which is GTEC. The University of Ghana has increased their fees by 25%. We are yet to get official confirmation from the university. We intend to write to the university for them to confirm if that is the case. And if it is not, the better for us. But if it is, then the university will be compelled to reverse such increments, because it has not been approved by Parliament, which is the statutory body responsible for increment of fees for tertiary, especially public tertiary institutions. So that is the position of the commission. We are yet to get a confirmation from the University of Ghana relative to this increment. And as I indicated, if it is the case that they did increase it without recourse to the laid-down procedures, then they will be asked to reverse it. No university is allowed to increase fees, including the University of Ghana, when it comes to academic facility user fees. Academic facility user fees are determined by Parliament. And as I indicated, GTEC did write to all public-funded universities and colleges that this year, fees have not been increased, so they are supposed to stay within last year's academic facility user fees, which is 2024-2025. So to the best of our knowledge, all institutions are abiding by it, including University of Ghana.
And there's been more development to this, and one of which is a statement that has been released by GTEC, and my colleague Fatal Bayaga is joining me in the studio to tell us more. Fatal, give us a bit of information in that statement.
Ken, so GTEC emphasized that publicly funded universities are not permitted to revise student fees without following proper procedures, including obtaining approval from Parliament as required by law. Now, one, reverse any fee increases and or dues immediately. Credit all continuing students who have overpaid compared to last academic year's fees for the next academic year. Refund the difference to final year students who have paid in excess of the fees for last academic year. Revert all dues, including SRC and GRASAC dues, to last academic year's rate. Suspend any new fees, such as the 75th anniversary dues and development levy, if newly introduced, except for those that were already in place. The fees must be set at the last academic year's rate. You are hereby requested to provide GTEC with evidence of compliance not later than January 12, 2026. Failure will result in the Commission instituting serious regulatory sanctions against the University of Ghana.
Thank you very much, Fatal. We've been speaking to some of the students on the University of Ghana campus, and they have expressed their dissatisfaction with the decision, citing poor infrastructure on campus. They complain that basic facilities, including non-functional classroom microphones and other learning amenities, remain in a deplorable state.
It's not good, because if you look at around, look at our classrooms, our microphones are not working, some of the school amenities are not actually in check. So if we are going to increase all these things, are you guys going to work on it? That's the question. If you are going to work on it, why not? We'll pay for it. But if you are not going to do anything about it, I'm sorry, some of us are going to, you know, protest against it. We are not happy with the increment. So please, University of Ghana Management, do something about it. We really beg you guys, please do something.
We being students, we are not asking too much from our leaders. Just go to Botswana here, you understand? Students are rather being paid for attending school. And we are not even asking of those sorts. Just provide the services that we are here for. We are here for what the knowledge that we can, that you can imbibe in us, then we can also help what in building the nation. So if this is what they are doing, we are not taking anything from them, and rather they are the ones taking or costing us much, then it's abnormal.
The least I can say about that is that, you see, a 25% increment to me is very dear. So I think they should look at it again, and then probably they should let it come down, right? So that we see, because the students should be met halfway, if possible. So this is to the leaders, or to the opinion, those who matters, they should look at this again for us.
If there is going to be an increment, at least the student body should be made aware why the increment, why the 25% increment. Probably, maybe the SRC has taken an initiative doing this. So the student body should be made aware that this is the reason for the increment. But then we didn't know anything. The fees came and then there was a 25% increment. Until recently, when the school management brought a communique out that it is not the school's body, or it's not the school body who implemented that, but then the SRC and then GRASAC.
All right, so those were some of the frustrations being shared by students on the University of Ghana campus. And we have also contacted management of the University of Ghana, who say they will respond to this in due course. Let's go to the telephone lines right now and speak to Kingsley Ajiman. He's a member of the Education Committee. Glad you could join me this evening. Does this 25% hike by the University of Ghana point to a failure of parliamentary oversight over public universities, really? And where does responsibility lie, would you say?
Thank you very much. Happy New Year to all your cherished listeners. I think the gentleman that gave account on the GTEC, my check also raises the same thing, that they've written to the University of Ghana to confirm or deny if indeed the increment has happened. What I can again also confirm to you is that before we went on this test, we have not increased fees and charges of our public universities and colleges. So let's wait and see the response from the University of Ghana, because they cannot operate in isolation, and that has to be approved by Parliament.
That's quite interesting because, as you've rightly concurred, GTEC is insisting these fee increments require parliamentary approval. And you've mentioned that Parliament was not aware of this. Are there any sanctions that are likely to follow then?
Well, the news that if it comes out, or if they really respond to GTEC that they have not had parliamentary approval, it means that it cannot stand. It means it's illegal. Okay, so it's not a matter of Parliament being aware. It is a statutory provision that institutions will have to place these matters before Parliament, for Parliament to approve or decline. But no such thing had ever come to us before we went on recess.
But things of illegality should come with sanctions, shouldn't they?
That will lie in their response to GTEC. You know where I'm coming from. Because JTEC has written to them to confirm or deny. If indeed they went ahead to charge such fees or announce the charging of such fees, it means that they are in a clear breach of the law and the law will take its course.
Right. They've been given until January 12. And if the University of Ghana fails to reverse the fees and issues refund by this date, what concrete action will Parliament take beyond GTEC's regulatory threats?
It means that they're in breach. And we have to check the statutory provisions on how such matters or such breaches must be handled.
I believe you heard some of the students who have complained about poor infrastructure, broken microphones, and inadequate facilities. Does that really not justify these fee hikes?
So, not really. You see, if you have had the opportunity to teach in our universities or have interactions with our public universities, I've had the opportunity because I teach at Gempa and I teach at KNUST. There's a need for the whole government machinery to really look at our tertiary education funding. It's something that we really need to have a national discourse about it. Because every university or college needs a lot of resources to be able to function properly. And you don't need to be told even by the students. It is quite a very troubling situation. The lecturer to student ratio, how students even get heated for teaching and learning to happen, access to libraries, both online, electronic databases. These are all basic things that every student needs, but they are very lacking. Even where we have, or there's a provision, there's a high access to it becomes a very difficult thing to do. So there's a lot that we need to do in our tertiary education space. And in spite of this challenge, it doesn't mean that we can breach the law and do what we want to.
And being on the minority side on the education committee, are these reforms that you intend to push to prevent public universities from, imposing sudden fee hikes on students in the future?
I didn't hear you. Please come again.
I'm saying that with you being on the education committee on the minority side, what reforms, or are these reforms that you mentioned, are these something that you would push together with your minority side to prevent public universities from imposing sudden fee hikes on students in their future?
Yes, so parliamentary committees are for both caucuses, and I don't think any parliamentarian will want to condone and connive with an illegality. What really the issue is that we need to begin to have a national discourse on how tertiary education needs to be funded. And because there's a lot of things that needs to be done in our tertiary space. How are we preparing these students or these graduates for the job market? There's a lacuna or there's a gap between academia and industry. And we need to get things right. We need to pursue an agenda that will make us globally competitive. Because, hey, you are not competing among ourselves. If you are going for any tertiary institution or college, you are competing with people of the West. Because now, by virtue of the internet, everything is out there. So we need to begin to have this discussion, which calls for a stakeholder engagement, and everybody must be called on board for us to discuss and come up with a clear, workable practical solutions that are workable within the Ghanaian context.
Dr. Ajiman, and do you think this should let Parliament or give Parliament room to move to standardize fee setting across all public tertiary institutions?
It's a standard. When it comes to academic facility user fee, these things are usually brought before Parliament. The education committee looks at it, and at plenary, we do the necessary motions and pass them. So it's a standardized kind of.
Right. Dr. Kingsley Ajiman, thank you very much. He's a member on the Education Committee of Parliament. Well, let's stay a while on education, though, because the Coalition of Unpaid Teachers says its members are currently reeling under serious financial hardship due to the government's failure to clear their salary arrears. According to the group, many teachers are struggling to pay rent, utility bills, and meet other basic living expenses, despite a series of protests held throughout 2025. The coalition says more than 6,000 teachers nationwide continue to face financial distress due to administrative delays and the failure of the Ghana Education Service to issue the required staff identification cards. The group adds that many of its members have reported to post for between 10 to 15 months, but have not received any salary at all. Speaking at a press conference in Accra, the lead convener of the coalition, Enoch Paul Ativo, said if the government fails to respond to their concerns by the end of this month, the group will be forced to embark on nationwide demonstrations.
We expect these matters to be comprehensively resolved within this month of January 2026. We cannot wait any longer, given that the majority of our colleagues who began work alongside us in September 2024 have received their full salary arrears with effect from September 2024. We urgently need our outstanding salaries to settle accumulated debts, pay our rent, cover healthcare expenses, and meet our basic living needs amid the mounting responsibilities we face. Failure to do so will leave us with no other alternative but to lawfully take to the streets to demonstrate and demand the justice we rightly deserve.
Right, and he further warned that legal action will be taken against the government in accordance with labor laws if the arrears are not settled by the end of January.
The legal action aspect that we are considering is what we find in the labor laws of Ghana. When you employ somebody, it's a contract, an agreement, and if you don't pay the person for a number of months, the person has the right to follow the legal procedures to go to court for his or her issues to be addressed by the judicial system of Ghana. So with that being said, we'll follow the lay down legal procedures, we'll seek legal consultations and advice, then we'll take it up from there for our issues and concerns to be addressed.
That's Enoch Paul Ativo. He's the lead convener of the Coalition of Unpaid Teachers. Let's go into the telephone lines once again and speak to the public relations officer at the Ministry of Education, Hashmin Mohammed. Hashmin, grateful for your time this evening. So what really is preventing the Education Ministry from ensuring that teachers' salary arrears are cleared despite assurances from the sector minister?
Well, thank you very much for granting me this opportunity. Well, first of all, to start with, let me say that it is not the intention of the Ministry of Education or the Minister to put any teacher in an uncomfortable situation after rendering service to the nation. And when it comes to issues of salaries of teachers, it is not only the sole responsibility of the Ministry of Education. There are other relevant stakeholders involved. We have heard their concerns, and the Ministry will liaise with other relevant stakeholders like the Finance Ministry to look at their issues. However, what I do know is that there are two categories of teachers in this who find themselves in this situation. There are a group who were issued with appointment letter, and in the content of the appointment letter, it stated the date in which the appointment will take effect. And those category of teachers, by my understanding, were recruited in November because they had issues with their staff ID card, and some of them were issued with fake letters. So after thorough investigation and then the cooperation between those concerned teachers and then GES, they were able to solve those issues. And there are some too, yes, they were recruited as far back in 2024, and they also have issues with their salaries. Those issues have come to the attention of the ministry, and the ministry through the Ghana Education Service is working with other relevant bodies from the finance ministry to get those issues resolved.
Hashmin, when should they expect their arrears to be cleared? Some say they've been owed arrears for as far back as 15 months now.
Well, it is an issue we need to investigate. And the ministry, like I told you, the Ministry of Education alone cannot fix this issue. The ministry will have to work with other relevant bodies like the Controller and the Accountant General Department, and then the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Finance itself. So it is something that the ministry will use with other relevant or other sister ministries to see how best this issue can be addressed.
Hashmin, you mentioned that you need to investigate it. What exactly are you investigating?
I've just told you that there are some other teachers whose appointment letters were issued in November. So on the face of their appointment letter, they know the date in which their appointment letters were issued. And my understanding, those are some of them, not all of them, some of them, their appointments were issued in November. And those group of people, they have been paid 2 months. And there are some other groups, yes, they may be having genuine concerns. So the ministry can only address it by looking at issues that have come to their attention, and then they will meet, the ministry will meet with the Ministry of Finance and Controller General Department to find solution to it.
Is that to say that the ministry is going to address this issue on a case by case basis? That's what you're trying to say?
What I can only report to you is that the ministry will address the issue as the concerns have come.
And now they're giving the ministry a deadline of up until the end of this month, that is the 31st of January, and if the issue is not resolved, they're going to hit the streets for a series of demonstrations. Is there any assurance that this issue will be resolved, or at least partly resolved, before the end of this month?
Well, we share in the frustration of those teachers, but however, we are appealing to them to cooperate with the Ghana Education Service so that collectively we can be able to find solution to this issue.
And what about those who were issued fake ID cards, as you mentioned? What becomes of them as well?
Those who were issued with fake appointments, if the issue is fake, it is fake, and it will not find itself in the records of the Ghana Education Service.
Thank you very much. Hashmin Mohammed is the Public Relations Officer at the Ministry of Education there, bringing us update and giving us some more information as to what to expect. He's pleading with the teachers to give them more time to address this particular issue there. You're still listening to Newsnight here on Joy 99.7 FM and across our numerous affiliates in Ghana. Let's bring you more stories tonight, because the Ghana National Association of Teachers, NAT, has declared zero tolerance for the assault or brutalization of teachers across the country. Speaking at the 54th National Delegates Conference of the Association held at the University of Professional Studies, Accra, President of NAT, Reverend Isaac Owusu, listed the creation of a safe working environment as a key demand, warning that teachers will not hesitate to shut down schools if attacks on their members persist. He also used the platform to condemn the 2025 killing of Mr. Yaya Bukari, a teacher at the Garu Primary School in the Upper East region.
There is a need for urgent need on the part of the employer to make the workplace of teachers safe and secure. Your Excellency, of late, teachers' risks of being attacked and assaulted by individuals or group of persons, including the student in the community. And recent example, Your Excellency, a recent example is the shooting incident that occurred in the Garu district of the Upper East Region. Your Excellency, the late Yahya Bukhari was a teacher and a NAT member who was a district treasurer of the good people of Garu district and was shot dead in line of duty. Your Excellency, but for the intervention of this teacher, a lot of school children could have been killed. Because when these unknown men were shooting, the children were break time and they were playing. So this innocent teacher rallied the children to get into the classroom. And unfortunately, he died this painful death. But until today, we have not heard anything from the employer. Your Excellency, with the greatest of respect, we have all the 16 region, their representative here. If for nothing at all, this one, Yahya Bukhari, left a wife and four children.
That's the president of NAT, Isaac Owusu, that. Well, the threat by teachers to lay down their tools if assaults continue has received the backing of organized labor. The Trades Union Congress, TUC, says it'll stand in solidarity with NAT should the association declare any industrial action stemming from attacks on teachers. Here's General Secretary Joshua Ansah.
From our chair, he said, teachers today, and I know they will do it. So I want to assure each and every person in this room that the Trade Union Congress, and for that matter, organized labor in this country, will support any action that will be taken by NAT and teachers in this country when a teacher is assaulted. I repeat, the Trade Union Congress of Ghana and workers of this country and organized labor will support and solidarize with NAT if any teacher is assaulted in this country. And I want to end my speech or my remark by saying, giving you a quote, which says that, seek ye the welfare of teachers first, and all other things shall be added unto you. Chowai!
Joshua Ansah is the General Secretary of the Trades Union Congress. And of course, President John Dramani Mahama was also present when all these concerns were laid before him. Let's go into the telephone lines right now and engage our presidential affairs correspondent, Maxwell Agbagba, who was also at this program. Maxwell, what was President Mahama's concern response to these concerns that were raised by the teachers?
Oh, Ken, President Mahama emphasized the importance of providing a safe and secure environment to teachers. He referred to an incident where a teacher was assaulted by students for refusing to allow them to cheat during exams. That happened sometime in 2025. He condemned the way the matter was later resolved without any charges being pressed, and assured that his administration would take strong measures to address assaults on teachers.
And a safe and secure working environment is a must. Indeed, I saw that video of I think it was a maths teacher being beaten because when he was invigilating, he refused to allow our children to cheat. And they had a sense of entitlement. And so why did you not allow us to cheat? And the unfortunate thing is that the matter went to the police station, and the parents of the students went to the police, and they said they settled the matter amicably. I mean, how is that? This is assault, it's criminal, you know. But when we inquired, the police also said, I think the teacher was compensated, so he didn't want to press charges anymore. But I said, at least the children should have been booked, they should have been taken through the legal process, and at least, if nothing at all, they should have been bonded to be of good behavior for a period of time, and then we'll believe that justice has been done. But just for parents to come and, you know, pay a little compensation, it will encourage others to do the same. Obu teacher na me papa beba betuya, you know. And so, as for assaults on teachers, I am with you 100%. We will deal with it.
And I still have Maxwell with me. Maxwell, before you go, though, the teachers also made some demands regarding the single spine pay structure and their pensions. What did they say?
The president began by commending the administration for its support of the education sector. He particularly listed plans to recruit over 50,000 teachers this year, ongoing infrastructure development, and other initiatives. However, he then shifted focus to what he described as the union demands. And President Mahama later joked that the MAS president had switched into union mode. Now, among the key demands were, one, an immediate review of the single spine pay policy this year to align with what he says is the government's research and agenda. The MAS president also called for urgent funding for public basic education. He also called for pension reforms.
Well, thank you very much, Maxwell Agbabadeh. That's our presidential affairs correspondent. Let's still stay on the telephone lines and bring in private legal practitioner Kweku Pencil. Glad you could join me this evening. The president did mention that one of the teachers who was tagged considered an out-of-court settlement after taking some money. Legally, is that the right thing that he should have done? Just take money and let the case die?
Hello, I cannot hear you too clearly, but I believe I get a gist of it, that the teacher who was assaulted accepted some compensation, accepted some payment.
Exactly.
For purposes of, withdrawing his charges at the police station. Is that what you're asking?
That is it, exactly.
Yeah, so let's put it this way. You know, a criminal offense, I mean, once has been committed and the person has been booked or the goes to the police station, it requires the complainant to prosecute the matter in court. However strong the evidence, unless you have a person who is willing to give evidence, typically the complainant and any witnesses that he may have, unless you are able to get them to come to court and they won't willingly give evidence in support of that criminal charge, it cannot be prosecuted. It's as simple as that. And that's what happens when a complainant decides to settle a case out of court with, the perpetrator, even though it's a criminal offense. So it's a very simple thing is that, even though it's against public policy, I mean good conscience or whatever, if I have a case against you and I decide I don't want to prosecute, fair enough, that's the end of the matter. There's nothing the police can do, nothing the attorney general can do, nothing. So that is it. That's the first part of it. That is the criminal aspect. Now, the Ghana Education Service has got its own code of conduct, that is disciplinary action in respect of, matters of this nature. And as for that, the gathering of evidence or in order to prefer charges is not of the essence of this disciplinary inquiry, that the victim himself must be physically present to give evidence and so forth and so on. And as long as they're able to gather the evidence, or in any case, if the accused person, rather the perpetrator, admits that he committed it, that's it. The disciplinary proceedings will go ahead. The sanctions that are provided under a code of conduct will then apply. So that's the distinction that I want to draw in what is going on. First and foremost,
right,
with regard to the police, if the person says, I don't want to give evidence, that's the end of the matter. That is the end of the matter. So if you collected compensation, it's regardless of whatever you did in order not to prosecute. So that's the first part, and that is very clear. With regard to what the Ghana Education Service is also doing by way of disciplinary action,
right,
they themselves, they have a code of conduct. I know they have rules of guidance in all of these matters, and like I've said, in disciplinary matters, whether you are fiscal present or not, the matter can proceed with the evidence that is available. So that's what I think is happening in the situation that we find ourselves.
Mr. Kweku Pencil, thank you very much for your expert analysis. He's a private legal practitioner, and that brings us to business. And George Riafe is here with the latest. George, Happy New Year to you. Welcome back.
Many happy returns.
Right.
Do you say the same to you?
I don't know.
Or many happy returns?
I don't know.
Okay, well, coming up in business, tax experts warn not all consumers will immediately benefit from the new VAT reforms seeking to reduce prices of goods and services. And Bank of Ghana moves to streamline operations of firms in their remittance business as it rolls out new guidelines and hints of license withdrawal for non-compliance. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business as a result of the new VAT reforms. Now that's the one, and coming from tax expert Francis Timoboy. Now this was after some businesses started reducing their price as a result of implementation of the new VAT reforms. Mr. Boy tells Jebus, the issue may have come about due to challenges by some of these businesses in calibrating their systems.
Once the policy takes legal effect from 1st January, implementation on the ground depends heavily on business readiness. Someone showed me a receipt where COVID-19 is still being charged, even though the law has been abolished. Ideally, GRA should have refunded this person the tax, but then again, the practicality, how are you going to do that? Many businesses, especially those with complex billing systems and integrated ERP platforms with a heavy volume of transaction, will require some time to configure their systems and update their invoices and their various point of sales to be able to accommodate this new tax structure. As a result, the benefits to consumers may be uneven in the early days, with some prices reflecting the immediate reliefs, and then the others adjusting gradually. This transitional lag is common with major tax reforms and does not undermine the policy intent. So what is required with such transitional curve?
And that is tax expert Francis Timoboy. Now, the Bank of Ghana has indicated that it will not hesitate to withdraw the license of any firm operating the remittance business for non-compliance of market regulations. There is more in this report.
According to the Bank of Ghana, it will not hesitate to extend the necessary fines to any firm in the remittance business, as well as international money transfer operators, for non-compliance of market regulations. Also, the central bank notes that if during their investigations it is established that international money transfer organizations submitted false information to secure permit, that institution's license will be withdrawn. These directives were captured in a new set of guidelines for the registration of firms that want to do business in the remittance space. The central bank argues that these new set of guidelines is aimed at promoting what it describes as securing an enabling environment for the remittance service. It went ahead to state that they will also, in line with international rules and regulations, check money laundering.
And that is a Business Dex report. Now, savings and loans companies have described the proposed reforms for the sector as timely and needed to aid market confidence. The central bank has announced that it will be rolling out a new set of targeted reforms at the microfinance sector as part of efforts to improve regulations for these sections this year. Chinebu Akodia is the executive secretary of the Association of Savings and Loans Companies.
They actually move the sector from fragmentation and weak oversight to stronger, better governed institutions that can genuinely support financial inclusion. Our members are actually prepared. So I can say that preparedness varies among the institutions, but awareness is very high. You see that many of the institutions are already strengthening their capital levels. They are also improving governance and then issue of compliance, while others are actually restructuring their institutions and going for partnerships among others. The reform actually is supposed to improve restoration of public confidence. But you see, if they are very consistent, then we will achieve the result that we are looking for.
Executive Secretary of the Savings and Loans Companies, that's the Association, Chinebu Akodia, and that's all for business on Newsnight. Back to you, Ken.
Thank you very much, George. Let's bring you a rather sad story tonight, because the late Member of Parliament, Nazar Toure Mahama, has been laid to rest, and this follows his burial rites at the National Mosque in Kanda in Accra, where family, Muslim clerics and sympathisers gathered to mourn his demise. The MP passed on Sunday at the Kolebu Teaching Hospital after a short ailment. He was laid to rest in less than 24 hours in accordance with Islamic doctrines. My colleague James Aveji covered the funeral and reports.
Among the mourners who gather here at the National Mosque in Kanda to bid a final farewell to the late Ayawaso East MP, Nazar Toure Mahama, our family members, constituents, and most especially former colleague MPs who eulogized the man as a politician who lived everything on the floor of the house in the last 13 years.
There is one member who is very diligent in attending to business in the house. Even to the very last day that we went on recess, just about 2 weeks ago, he was with us. And if you recall, he actually moved the report of the committee to be adopted. He moved the motion for the report of the committee to be adopted as part of the consideration of the estimates before appropriation was passed.
For people like former chairman of the NDC of Usuampofo, the former MP was a man who lived larger than politics.
He called me one day and said, "Chairman, I have a number of filling stations across the country. Anytime you are traveling, just tell me where you are going. I will direct you to one of them. When you get there, let the attendant call me." So for about a year to 2 years, he was putting fuel in my car free of charge anywhere that I'm going.
Chairman of the Energy Committee, which the late Nazar Toure served as a deputy until his demise, Emmanuel Kwesi Bejira extols the influence and leadership he wielded on the committee, indicating that there was more work to be done before he left.
It's a big pain, it's a painful loss to the committee, because as we speak now, we have a law that is the amendment to the agreement, the petroleum agreement for Talo Oil and its partners. If it had been there, he would guide us that, okay, when they were passing it, this is what they did in 2013. But it's not the world, the Lord knows better.
Even the minority have some fond memories to share. Jerry Ahmed Shaib, a second deputy whip.
I mean, one of the times I remember asking what the regional minister is doing, because when the previous regional minister was there, he brought us together a lot. He said he had invited her to ensure that a meeting was called, and he came back to me to give me feedback. In fact, he even invited me to a subsequent meeting, but I was not available to attend.
The late MP was later taken for burial in Medina after the janaza prayer was offered for him by the large gathering of Muslims, as the 60 years of life and 13 years of parliamentary work of Alhaji Nazar Toure Mahama comes to an end, the thoughts and prayers of mourners go to the wife and children as they wish his soul a peaceful rest. James Savaji, National Mosque, Kanda, Accra.
May his soul continue to rest in peace and may his memory be a blessing. James Aveji is joining me in studio with details of the next line of action after today. James, tell us more.
Well, Ken, so if you look at the standing orders of Parliament as well as the Constitution, Article 97, as well as 112, there are some responsibilities on both Parliament and the Electoral Commission. As far as Parliament is concerned, if you look at the standing orders, the family is now expected to write officially to notify the Speaker about the demise of the MP, even though the clerk himself has been at the funeral grounds today. That has to be done officially by the family, and then the speaker through the clerk would now write to the Electoral Commission to declare that seat vacant, the Ayawaso East seat vacant, and the EC would have some 90 days in this instance, because it is demise. The constitution says the EC has within 90 days to organize by-election in this particular constituency to get a replacement for the constituent. If it were under other circumstances, this should have been in 60 days, but this will be 90 days. But because Parliament is on recess, this information to the Speaker could be either via WhatsApp message or even a letter to the Speaker, and that should be enough to trigger the entire process.
Well, thank you very much, James. It's now time for sports, and Benaya is here with the latest, and he's telling me that he has some breaking news for us. Tell us what's happening.
But before the breaking news, though, let me just give an update on the Egypt-Benin game, because that's what I headlined. So, Egypt have qualified for the quarterfinal after beating Benin 3-1. Now, Marouane Atia opened the scoring for Egypt in the 69th minute, but Jodel Dusu struck in the 83rd minute for Benin to draw level to force the game into extra time. But Egypt eventually found a decisive breakthrough in the 97th minute when Yasser Ibrahim scored to restore their lead before Mohamed Salah added a third in the 124th minute to seal victory to send the Pharaohs through to the last eight of the African Cup of Nations. Now, Ken, the sad news here is Ghana defender Mohamed Salisu.
He's
been a key figure for Black Stars, especially at the back.
Yeah.
Now, news just broke out that the defender is said to miss the World Cup after suffering an ACL injury with Monaco over the weekend against Lyon. Now, at the end of the match, the centre-back suffered an injury on his left knee, and after medical examinations, it's now confirmed this evening that the centre-back has torn his anterior cruciate ligament and is said to be out for a long spell, which officially keeps him out of the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
That's quite unfortunate. That's
very, very unfortunate.
But that's also going to give a chance to the other bright stars
To step
to
up.
Shine.
Yeah.
We wish them all the best.
Let's see what happens. So that's it for sports.
Thank you very much, Benaya. And traders at the Kaswa market that was ravaged by an inferno on Sunday are calling on government to come to their aid. The fire broke out on Sunday morning and destroyed many shops and goods. A similar fire incident hit the same section of the market last year. Preliminary investigations by the fire service shows the fire was caused by a faulty electrical connection. In the meantime, the traders are scavenging the ashes for the little they can salvage. Gemma Pia was at the market earlier today and filed this report.
Messiah Sanam Ghana Limited.
The massive fire swept through the market around 4 p.m. yesterday, destroying more than 360 stalls and wiping out goods worth thousands of cedis. The Ghana National Fire Service says traders delayed in alerting emergency services, a situation that worsened the extent of the damage. The Member of Parliament for Ewutu Senya East, Phyllis Nakoyo Okuno, visited the market to assess the devastation and commiserate with affected traders.
I don't have a shop in the market, but I also have my goods bins because their goods are my goods, their wares are my wares. So we are in this together. I just want to assure them that they are not alone and we are doing this together.
Some of the affected traders shared accounts of their losses, expressing hope that government support will enable them to restart their businesses.
I sell tissues, rubbers, pack, and a lot. I sell a lot of things. Probably 20,000, that's 200 million.
Well, if you know, we frame me 430. What can tell me say? Me go ramen say rough for them. What can me apatani ashiu? Me say oh me fro apatani. What say oh me da me aya grow me brand tantam. It's true moment. Me sorry me buy. I'm buy me betu. Apatani nash.
Meanwhile, the National Disaster Management Organization, NADMO, says it is compiling data on affected traders to determine the appropriate support to offer.
If you look at your back, a lot has been destroyed. Some didn't get anything. And even if those that have something has been destroyed, it can be sell or use again. So we packed all those goods to our office. Yes, we will assess on them and then we will know what to do later.
Further investigations by the fire service, including a review of CCTV footage from the market, indicates the fire was triggered by an electrical fault. According to ACFO Grade 2, Merinda Atigamensa, investigations are ongoing to identify any additional factors that may have contributed to the outbreak.
We are still doing investigation
concerning to know the actual, we know the cost. But that is not maybe, that may not be the main full cause of the fire. There might be a lot of issues. So we'll see to it, we'll do investigation further.
So even though they have their wares destroyed by the fire, they are hopeful that they can rebuild their lives with the help of the government. Reporting live from the Ewutu Senya East District of the Central Region, Kasuat New Market, my name is Gemma Apia.
And construction work is progressing steadily on the Todeme Jemene roads, which connect the two most viable economic communities in the South Dai district of the Volta region. The constructions, which are under the government's Big Push Agenda project, will also see the rehabilitation of some inner access roads in Jemene. There's more in the following report by Fred Kwame Asari.
Messiah Sanam Ghana Limited began construction works on the deplorable Jemene Todeme Road in late October 2025. The construction works entail the upgrading of the Todeme Road through to Kpalime, Kaira to Jemene, measuring about 17.7 kilometers. About 6 kilometers of roads in the Jemene Township would also be upgraded to enhance socioeconomic activity. South Dai District Chief Executive Courage Kwame Kokuroko anticipates the road network to be completed in June 2026.
South Dai, our road network is very bad. That is from Todeme to Jemene has been a major problem to the residents of South Dai. Thank God, within that, since October ending, the contractor came to site. And I believe when you were coming, you have seen the improvement on the road. Our prayer is that by the close of June, July, thereabout, the contractor should be able to finish with the work so that at least we will be able to commute between Todeme and Jemene and do good business.
A member of parliament for South Dai and Majority Chief Whip Nelson Roxen Dapiamekpo believes a better road network would accelerate the socio-economic development of the area.
That our roads will be completed, we've seen that major rigorous activities is ongoing on the road infrastructure. Culverts are being done. The contractor assures me that by June, the roads will be tarred. Then we'll deal with our water, extension of potable water to the area. We don't have, even though we are by the mighty lake, we don't have potable water. So.
And that's it for News Night tonight. But before we go, here, a few of your messages that you've been sending to our WhatsApp platform. This is from Tokbivi Pitero from Tekvi. He says, I wish to say that this government owed teachers arrears as far back as 2016 before losing the elections. So why refusing to pay teachers? And this is from Prof Intema. He says, this thing called democracy will always lead to absurdity, plethora of SHS problems government cannot resolve. Yet when PTA decides to contribute to address the problem, the same government says no. Now university students decide to levy themselves to solve a critical problem. That one too, the government